now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Larry Warren. Larry is the primary eyewitness at Rendlesham Forest, at the also referred to as Bentwaters, Royal Air Force Base Bentwaters. Woodbridge was a twin base. And it comes, this discussion with Larry comes at a key moment in our planet's history. We just had the clown show today, this not even a limited hangout that happened in America, where these congressional types just pretended to not know anything, which they probably didn't know anything. But here we're going to get the real intel dump, because Larry was at the third night of events, which I'm not putting Larry's story superseding that night over the others, but as you'll know, if you're not familiar with the story, as you'll hear, you'll realize that this was a significant event on a par with Roswell, I would say. And a little bit of a historical background about Rendlesham Forest. This event did not happen in a vacuum. There was a series of events leading up to what became the Rendlesham Forest incident events. The aliens, for lack of a better term, non-human life forms of various stripes, have had a long-standing interest in the nuclear weapons capability, thermonuclear weapons capability of the human race. From the inception of the Manhattan Engineering District, post-war, post-World War II, the Atomic Energy Commission, the Hanford plant in Washington, where they developed the weapons-grade plutonium, Oak Ridge, where they also developed fissionable material, and Sandia and other places were frequently visited, frequently reconned, for lack of a better term, by non-human life forms. That was well known, and it's well established. We know this from the declassified government documents. And we also know, you fast forward to the 1960s, you had so-called faded giant incidents where flying saucers, UFOs would fly over SAC bases, Strategic Air Command missile bases, and these would be spread out for hundreds of miles. They spread out these silos so that if a silo got a ground-based detonation from a thermonuclear warhead or warheads, the other, in theory, the other launch sites would still survive miles and miles away. And we know that we had these faded giant incidents where flying saucers or UFOs would hover sometimes right over the missile silos, sometimes right over the launch control facilities, or be in the environs, and at times cause upwards of 20 nuclear missiles to go offline, inoperable, unable to be launched. And then you fast forward still further, you had the 1973 humanoid wave around the world. Remember Calvin Parker, Charles Hickson, Pascagoula, Mississippi, and that was 1973. Herb Shermer, the patrolman in Nebraska, was abducted, taken on board in Nebraska, 1973. And then a couple of years later, 1975, Travis Walton. You also had the Strategic Air Command bases, the Northern Tier bases along the Northern Tier of the U.S. were visited by flying saucers, UFOs, and sometimes they hovered right over the nuclear missile silos, launch control facilities, storage depots, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to put this experience that Larry's going to describe and the aftermath, which is just as important, in its proper historical context. So now 1980 rolls around. There's a lot of tension between the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact, and NATO and America. You had RAF Woodbridge, RAF Bentwaters, a dual base in Suffolk County, England. And RAF Bentwaters was the largest repository in England of tactical nuclear weapons. Again, this long-standing interest. You know, again, the ETs were visiting the Atomic Energy Commission plants. They were visiting the Strategic Air Command bases in 1975. 1980 rolls around. Bette Waters is the largest repository of tactical nuclear weapons in Europe, as far as I know, right? So let's look at it from that perspective. And then here is Larry coming back from leave from Holland. That's a whole other story. But a couple of more comments to kind of give the background of what we're going to discuss here. Larry is a classic whistleblower. He was really there. He experienced these things. In fact, Larry has had his own ET abduction experiences leading up to all this, okay? Long before Bette Waters, RAF Woodbridge, Rendlesham Forest incident, he was already having ET experiences. So it's important to look at it from that context as well. So we're looking at a Cold War scenario. We're looking at a place, the Rendlesham Forest, that for centuries had had reports of all kinds of phenomena. So what was going on at Bentwaters, not only from a UFO security sense, but also from the standpoint of witchcraft, of supernatural, cryptids, etc., that had been going on at RAF Bentwaters, Rendlesham, what became RAF Bentwaters and the Rendlesham Forest for centuries already. Okay, so just keep that point in mind. And another thing that needs to be pointed out, that from a Cold War perspective, Larry was base security. He, as far as I know, he wasn't law enforcement. Those are two different MOSs, okay? Military occupational specialty. So I want you to look at this. I'm a student of military history, as many of you know. This is something that you should be aware of. In 1980, just one of the things that Larry and his ilk were trained for, one of the contingencies, was to thwart a Soviet airborne attack. We're talking about Soviet airborne Cold War era, preceded by Soviet Spetsnaz, GRU Spetsnaz, Army Special Forces in the Soviet Union. That's who Larry was trained to thwart and prevent their takeover of the base, okay? So we have to put this in its proper historical context. Larry was not a policeman. He was there to guard the base and the nuclear ordnance. Okay, that's an important point to understand about all of this. One last point, Larry and I have mutual friends. The late, great Dr. Carla Turner shared the bill with Larry at a Bob Urey's conference. I spoke for Bob Urey in Philadelphia one year, and Larry shared the bill with Dr. Carla Turner, who always spoke highly of Larry, always talked about his bravery, his candor, his sincerity. And also Barbara Bartholik, my late, great mentor, also was on the same bill. She gave a very, very rare public appearance at Bob Urey's conference in Philadelphia. So, you know, we share, you know, kind of the same kind of mutual friends. So without any further ado, Larry Warren, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
It's great to see you, James, after a lot of years, man. So thanks for having me on.
Yes, Larry, you know, we first crossed paths when Larry gave a lecture at the San Diego UFO Society. And to me, that was the mother of all intel dumps, because I had only read a little bit about Rendlesham Forest by that point. I saw the Unsolved Mysteries segment. And then for Larry to come forth and tell the whole story, that was, to me, it was quite a stunning experience. So Larry, wherever you want to take this, wherever you want to go with it, the floor is yours.
Well, thanks. And so is this fly that's in my house. I hope you don't hear it. But and thanks for defining what we were. There was law enforcement. There was security specialists. And that was 81130. And we were trained in all the big guns and, you know, of the time. I mean, it was Vietnam era weaponry. It was only 4 years. I enlisted in 79 when the Iran hostage thing happened. That motivated me to go in. So I enlisted in the Air Force, got a guaranteed country of choice because they had incentives to get you in, because it was very anti-military still. You know, again, put in context, Jimmy Carter was president 4 years after Saigon fell. And it wasn't a popular thing to do. I was in rock and roll bands. that wasn't going to work out. So that's what I did. And we trained in Texas. We had our tech school in Texas. And it was real deal stuff. We trained with an Army base for the combat, what was it, air base ground defense end of it all. It wasn't some lightweight kind of thing, guys just wandering around making up UFO stories. And, you know, you see, I often say on that napalm page I have, is that you look at a picture of us. I have a picture of me getting my hair cut off in Texas. And I found that just not long ago. And you look at that kid just out of high school. And then you look at 6 months later after the combat training, all that kind of stuff. It was a whole different face on the kid. And that'd be true for any veteran. You'd be a veteran to understand that. If you're not a veteran, you've seen it in movies, you don't understand that. All my TIs from basic training right through tech school were ex, and it just happened to fall that way, were ex-Vietnam Marine Corps, USMC. And we know, and that's the old, that was the full metal jacket version of Arley Army, right? That's what we had. And so we were trained, I wouldn't say like basic like Marines, but it wasn't much less. Nowadays, I don't know how the military is. I hope it's not woke or anything. I hope not. And so off to England I went. We graduated. You had to earn your berets. You know, just you see these stupid shows on television. I've been in a few where they have actors and they, you know, it's just not right. I've seen them in Russian outfits, and that's television. And we had to earn those berets. And then at the end, you're issued your badge. And though we're under the law enforcement or the security police wing, we were combatants. And you wouldn't see us. We were on. So you get to your base. I got to Bentwaters. I was initially supposed to go there. And they flipped assignment. That never happens, but it did. And only military people know that that shouldn't happen. And I've shown that it happened. And they go, wow, you know, military guys, and they can talk. They just understand it. You know, the UFO world, most of them haven't served a cupcake. So they, you know, no offense, but they don't understand military situations like you just defined very well. At that era, you know, you're going back 42 years, it was still the post-Vietnam era. Our uniforms looked like the Vietnam era. Nothing had changed. We didn't have those not German-looking helmets and all that. I don't know what just happened with the screen.
Oh, no, I'm just, it's me being an amateur in many ways. What I'm trying to do, I'm pulling up pictures of you back in the day.
Right.
Because I think that it's important to people to get a look at what you're talking about, you know.
I thought the fly did something to my phone thing here. So I'm supposed to be this high-tech master forger and what was it called? A Photoshopper, but, you know, believe me.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do 50 steps to do where it takes one push of a button. I overdo everything. So, and the fly. But yeah, that's what it was. That was in Fort Sam Houston in Texas, Camp Bullis. And nowadays they have dorms for all the people in our, and it's all combined. There were no women in my job role at all. So when you hear Major Lori Reifelt, who was, I met on my first day on the base, she was on the entry guard chat on Bentwaters. And she's from New York, and we got a yakking, and but Lori left, she rotated on the 15th. And that's the day, we had 2 weeks incoming training, but Lori was law enforcement. She wasn't security. Forces. So we had, you know, you had 2 weeks of incoming training based familiarization, I called it. And after you complete that, you went to the range and you requalify. I was a marksman. It was no big deal, but marksman. And we get to the, you had to have your clearance. And Halt always, Colonel Halt is this guy that was our deputy base commander. I just shouldn't assume everyone knows what I'm talking about. Half the time, I don't know what I'm talking about at this age. But Charles Halt authored the famous memo that my information got out in 1983 via the Freedom of Information Act. And he's hated me ever since because his name was affixed to it. So I kind of outed him and didn't do it on purpose. And there's been a No, we got on for a while, but nowadays, I don't know, man. He's an old guy, so am I. But you had to complete that, and then your security clearance comes in. You can't work on shift until it does. My security clearance came through on the 15th of December. Then I started working with law enforcement just to get familiar, you know, because I was new, but I knew the job, but it was a different job. And then I got posted. It was so funny. Just days before the incident, I got assigned on my. I was between C and D flight. We had four shifts, 6 days on, 3 days off. So, but a whole previous week, I'd been running around with law enforcement and breaking up parties on the base. Officers, teenagers were really out of hand. Kids, military brats, they call them. They sure were, man. And you got to remember, we were in a remote base, even though it was 80 miles north. East of London, it was considered a remote assignment. It wasn't even like Lakenheath or Milton Hall. We had many bases here. They're all RAF, but they're all Yankees, you know, Americans. And I am in England, by the way. They don't want me back in America. I don't know. And we got there. I didn't know we had nuclear weapons. I suspect as much, because that was part of my training, is WSA security and speak ads, all that kind of thing, which is the towers. It takes a long time to get into those roles because you need extra nuclear clearance. So I only went worked our SA one night. I shadowed a guy, but I wasn't cleared to work on my own in there. I could work the flight line, alpha areas, all that, guard airplanes, you're in a shack, the whole bag. And so a lot of guys I went through training with ended up on Bentwaters with because they had a depletion of forces because of a, and I used to avoid saying this, but it was the days there was some kind of squadron or a base-wide, and I hate saying it because the debunkers and the enemies of the truth will say, well, they're all on drugs. Believe me, it was like hash kind of thing, probably. There was no, I didn't know what cocaine was back then. I never saw anyone do it. I thought, the Clapton song, I thought it was a girl's name. And I played it in bands. I didn't know what it was. So there was some alleged drug bust and they were depleted. We all came in. But I could see the base was such vibed out raw is that, there was the highest rate of alcoholism I'd ever seen at my young years. And it just got a lot of young people drinking. There was just a negative, negative vibe on that place. And Lori Reifel talks about it. I wrote about it in my book, and it was just a feeling. It was the first day I got on there, there was just something, I'd already been on bases. I'd been on Plattsburgh. I had to pick up a paycheck when I was on leave, the SAC base, and I, go on. I'm on my uniform now. I'm one of them. And that wasn't vibe like that. I was at Lake and Heath Milton Hall. There was no vibes like that. So I can't explain that, but maybe it was anticipated something was coming, and you have that sixth sense. Some of us did, some didn't. And so we get on our assignment, and basically, and I have to tell you, James, if anyone thinks they're familiar with Rendlesham, they're really not. And I can't say even until this film, we maybe get it. I didn't know all the aspects of it. I've never pretended to. All I could deal with is me and try to get other people to come forward. That was since I went public by mistake, wasn't on purpose to be a human dartboard for the subject, which will happen to you, trust me. I went forward to pull other guys in. I saw a lot of abuse of power. And even at a young age, I had a mother who was part of the civil rights marches and, there were no racial vibes in my home. Thank God. And that was the 60s, man. I remember all the riots, all that kind of thing in New York. And, just it wasn't a part of my remit, at all. And thank God, thanks to my parents and whatever. But we, you have all these different people on these foreign bases. All of us were young. We had Ed Cabanasak on the first night with John Burroughs, Jim Peniston, Bud Stephens, who was my reporting official, picked me up that day. It wasn't just John and Jim. And then there was Eddie Cabanasak. I went through training with Ed. We flew over the same day. he was involved, but they always try to say, well, I wasn't there long enough. Why was Ed involved on night one? But that you can go crazy on this, the game. You seem to be more versed, but I'll tell you, they get you from every side. It does worry you. And it just pisses me off, so I stick around. But I'm 61 this year. It's getting like, when does this end, man? So we were all a lot of young guys, and we didn't know how the machine worked. As one colonel told me one time, he goes, I'm with you 100%, son, but you didn't know how the machine worked. And he was right. We were all in a home. A lot of them had never been away from home. I'd come to England as an exchange student, not because I was some rocket scientist. You know, my mother worked, single mother worked hard, got me over. My high school had an exchange with a town in Essex. And man, that just cut me loose because I'm a big British rock guy and I love all the Beatles and all that. And it was such an experience. I knew whatever branch was based in England, I was coming back once I decided. And that's why I settled on the Air Force. But I wanted to go in the Army and go into Special Forces. You never know. But then I found out you had to be a sergeant before you even could try out for that. And I said, well, that's too long. I need a beret now. But we had to earn our beret. It wasn't like green berets after. So we're all in a new place. These guys hadn't been out of their little towns, most of them. I'm running down during training. We was off on the weekends. I was down in London most weekends. Totally. It was just down. John Lennon was killed on the 8th, the 9th here. That was a downer, man. That was a real, I can tell you, a real shock. And then you had some certain people from certain parts of my country, our ex-country, saying, you know, well, that guy was a communist. I wanted to go off on some of these people. But that was the era. That's how long ago this is. And that has been gone almost 42 years. I was 19 years old and thought I knew it all. So I had no idea there had been two previous nights of UFO activity. They talk about rumors and things. I had no idea. All we ever heard about when we got to the base was ghost stories, like Eastern Charlie, who was a bomber pilot, a German. I mean, the base got bombed a lot. Woodbridge was a crash recovery base during World War II for our bombers. And it was all grass fields, I guess. They didn't have tarmac. And they came in damaged, and that's where they could crash land. And the Germans lost planes there. You know, were shot down, and this is supposed to be ghosts running around, and you could vibe that. You're like, well, I didn't see one, but I saw enough. You know, who needs any more? And so there was all the ghost thing, which East Anglia has a history, as you mentioned. You know your history. They had a black dog that ran around, all kind of things. A lady with no face on a bike. You know, I didn't want to see any of that or get involved with any of that. And so it was all these old stories. We had the Viking burial ship at Sutton Hoo, very nearby. And it was this ancient Viking ship they dug up. So there's such this old mythical history in that area, really weird. So I did not, like I said, I didn't know there was the famous Jim and John time travel. Now listen, they had a real things happen. I think there's been a real attempt to, and now they go at each other, and once Mr. Pope got involved with them, they've fallen out now. He seems to have infiltrated anything to do with this. And he's had a go at me and lies and things and just outright lies because I can't afford to sue people in the States. But this is what he does. He's on TV every minute here.
He's a disruptor. I call people like him a disruptor.
And that's a beautiful word because I had other words, but I won't say them. There might be children. But yeah, a disruptor, and that is stunning. Because I have to tell you, and I know I'm jumping, but I will go back. I met Nick when he worked at MOD, and he did. I know people over here are now saying he actually did. He was no big executive. In fact, when my book came out in 97, it was reviewed in the MOD in-house newsletter by him. He wrote on the dust jacket. Nick was a great guy. He thought I was military intelligence. That's how he introduced himself to me in front of MOD. I was with Timothy Good at that time. That's how I met Nick. Nick was not known in the work at all. Not at all. I was here on business, music related, had nothing to do with UFOs. And we got, Tim got us together. And Nick said to me in Whitehall, I remember he comes up, and, hey, Nick Pope. He was much younger, we all were. And he said, Larry Warren, Sergeant, U.S. Military Intelligence, or Air Force Commando. No, I was an airman first class, first of all, and military intelligence, well, someone owes me some money, you know? So that was odd. And I look back on it. We based at a Nick's house, me and the other one, during our book tour in England. We had a Times best-selling book for, believe it or not, but we couldn't believe it. We got robbed on it, or at least I did. Who knows now the way certain things have unfolded. But and nevertheless, Nick was a big advocate. He was almost like a PR agent for us. We based out of his house when he still lived in England. He's out in Arizona now. And it was a whole different thing. Then he got involved, messed up Georgina Brunei's head in her book. I had my co-author getting involved behind the scenes. They're doing it. I didn't know it then. I felt it and know it. You know, shame on me for most of it. My radar has been broken, I guess. But not no more. A lot of lessons, a lot of human lessons with this stuff, I'll tell you. I'm only about witnesses. I'm not about people with opinions and researchers. I mean, you need guys like you that know the where the dot the I, the history of the subject, the improper perspective, instead of some political agenda. You don't have to believe me. I don't, you know, I'm not sure what went on there, but I know I went through it, and I know other people went through it. So back to those nights, I did not know there had been previous nights. I can have a lot of opinions on what happened with those guys. They write Ed Kabanasak out of it, and it's just, you never know. There were three guys. John did not see what Jim says. Jim gets, I know I was trained in one way. They were law enforcement, by the way. They weren't SSP, security forces like me.
Kabanasak himself was law enforcement, or he was security?
No, Ed was security. That was doing a ride along with Peniston. Peniston grabbed him.
And Peniston was law enforcement.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And his staff sergeant. And John was law enforcement. And he was an airman first class. They always call them sergeants and all. John was an airman first class, just like me at that time. Big, tall guy, Ellie. We called him type of guy. And John's, you know, listen, he just lost his mom. I have nothing against John. I've enjoyed hanging with him a number of times. People think we don't know each other. And I have a lot of issues with things, but he deals with things too. We have a lot of similar background with life experience. Funny enough, Jim and I do too, but this anger thing, this I want to dominate the undominable. You can't dominate this event. It ain't about us at all, man. It's so big, even though it's so old. You know, again, I'm seeing on these hearings, the UAP bull. What is this UAP, man? It's a rewrite. They've done the rewrite on Rendlesham or Bentwaters. They've done rewrites on, it's stunning. And most of your enemies come from within the subject. You know, the government don't have to sit back, James, and, you know, we got to send men in black after this dude. Man, they just sit back. They have think tanks that say, this is how the UFO community will contain them. And then do great damage to them any way they possibly can. Yeah, there's me and John on the screen and a cop and stuff. A big supporter of RFI, that policeman. I forget his name. So, you know, I'm like Archie Bunker. I have a lot of opinions. Been around a long time. I've seen the worst and I've seen the best of my great people in bed. But then there was the next night. Now, that's been very controversial. That involved a Lieutenant Monty Templin. And she was law enforcement.
Could you repeat her name again? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, Bonnie Templin. She was a, I believe, second lieutenant, the gold bar. Isn't that a second lieutenant? I forget now. Then the silver is the first lieutenant, right? And a black woman of color. And she was, remember, women were not in my job role at all. Women may not like that. I'm not saying they couldn't be it, but they could not be combatants back then. So they were always the law enforcement. They carried 38 sidearms back then. So And all I can say about that, and I know the film, and folks, the Capel Green is coming out. It's been a long haul with a small crew. We can go into that later. And, you know, no big Hollywood, even though it's Hollywood level stuff. It's not like you see it on TV, this BS. It's amazing. And it's been a hell of a life. I thought it'd be quicker, but you got one guy, the filmmaker, doing it all. It's one of these artist types, got to. But he wants it right, and he wants it as many steps in it. It already is. Even the opening of the film, which he, I think, rejected, was better than anything's ever been done in the subject. It's brilliant.
And but just very quickly, let me interject really quickly. Similar to Roswell, Reynolds from Forest, R.A.F. Bentwaters has a cast of characters. Larry has already mentioned John Burroughs, law enforcement, Edward Cabansack's, base security specialist, and this woman that you're describing now. So we're talking about real people here. And remember, many of these people were young. I mean, I was just, I can't imagine what I would have thought if I'd gone through what you went through at that age. But please continue.
I still don't know what I think. And, you know, because everything stopped. You know, you're going along one way in life. And then, now, like you mentioned before, I've had a lifetime with other people, by the way. They didn't like it with the phenomena. I don't know about abduction being on a craft. I don't know if these things are other dimensional. I don't know what. It's so weird and creepy. It ain't fun. And but I, like Travis has been a friend of mine 35 years. I've known Travis, Alan Godfrey. I know all those legends. Betty Hill, I had the honor of. She said, I believe you. I don't believe half of them in this room. And as we chain smoked, that was an honor. But that's been the joy. Alan Hynek, I knew him, all these people that probably the kids don't even know of anymore, the real legends and stuff.
Yeah, you were friends with Betty and Drayson, and then you knew Ray Fowler too, didn't you?
I knew Betty and her husband, Bob. God bless Betty's soul. So many people have been going and passing. And Betty, because of Betty Andreasen and Robert Luca, her husband, who's a researcher, the famous story, you'd never see me sitting here without those two, because I had a wisdom teeth. If you read the book, I don't need the book. It lived it. As long as I have a memory, I can still remember it like yesterday. I had a wisdom tooth pulled down. And so you know what that's like. And it was real bad. I still remember it. And I'm looking through, I was in Connecticut, the state of at the time, and there was a Hartford, Connecticut newspaper, the main rag out of Hartford, and it talked about this couple in Cheshire, Connecticut with their experiences, and I'm thinking, what a bunch of lunatics, right? But it listed where Bob worked, and it was Middletown Toyota. This is 40 years ago, I still remember. And I picked up the phone, called information back then, kids, you didn't have this thing I'm talking into, and called him, and I said, listen, I couldn't speak. I sounded like a drunk. Right? And I said, I went through something in the Air Force. I didn't even tell my father about this. My father's executive, not the type of, I just a Korean era veteran. He's not going to buy any of this. Why I left the service. And I'm honorably discharged, by the way. I've heard all the stories. And I called, and so long story short, we got together. One evening, some very strange things happened in their living room. Robert, her husband, Betty, was a lovely woman. What disturbed me, she had two sons killed in a car accident. You know, the mortality doesn't, I was probably 22, is not as real when you're young as when you're at this age and friends are dropping dead and all kinds of things you grew up with, they're gone. That's just life, I guess, isn't it? And, two sons were killed in an auto accident. And I reminded her of one of her boys. That was really something, you know. And so a lot of people used to say with Betty, she brings Ray Fowler, I got to know through. And I think I did some conferences with Ray in the early days, in the 80s, early 80s. Bud Hopkins, Bud was new in all this. He only had Missing Time. And believe me, the researchers, they weren't eating. You could talk about vehicles or lights like Bruce McAfee, dear friend. But when you're talking about what's driving those lights, oh, that was forbidden then. You know, Jen, it was not a good time to be people like an experiencer at all. And then comes along me, which no one, and this ain't blowing smoke, but with a military thing from the inside out. There was no one to that point, like, who is this nut? Now, I had no agenda other than it just spiraled. They got me in touch with Larry Fawcett and Barry Greenwood. Larry was a cop in Connecticut at that time. He's deceased also. Most people I'm going to mention are gone. And wrote the book Clear Intent. It was the first account of the incidents ever in a book, even before Sky Crash, called Clear Intent. It was a little thing. They called me this fake name, Art Wallace. I had nothing to do with it. I'm still asked about Art Wallace. All I said is, I don't want my name used until other people back up what I'm saying. There was no Halt document. I didn't know Halt was involved. That's at all. I saw a guy that looked like him thinking back, and I asked him about it. I met with Halt, you know, many years ago now. And because of that,
I didn't want you to necessarily jump ahead, but that's all extremely valid. But I just pointed out that you were contemporaries and friends with the late great Betty Andreessen, who was one of my personal heroes.
And I,
just get back
and
to
I should have I should have said just yes.
Oh, yes, but because that's all without, valid because it, without, it leads what, it leads into all the stuff, you know, later.
Without them, there'd be no Halt memo, the revolution thing.
Yeah, exactly, because it brought Fawcett into the picture, et cetera. But you were talking about the black Air Force woman and her role in this.
Yeah. Well, that was Lieutenant Bonnie Tamplin. And I have to tell you that, and this is explored very heavily in Cable Grid. Now, I have to tell you the truth. I remember, I don't know the details of, because they don't let me see all of this because they think I'll run a route, which I wouldn't. But there's a lot of things I don't know about that is in the film and people that were interviewed and things and realities that have been proven. But what I experienced with Bonnie Tamplin is after the events, you have to understand, after my night on the third night, I call my mother within hours of it with Greg Batrip, who was involved also. We were at the chow hall. We hadn't even been debriefed yet. This thing hit that base right out of left field. They think you have secret teams in there. Well, that came, but they weren't there yet. So they're trying to contain this thing that had been breaking out for two nights. It got rather hairy, apparently, with, and now I understand why, to a degree, with Lieutenant Tamplin, is because sometime later, I don't remember, early 81, I was working for security police operations. They took me off flight. I wasn't kicked off flight. I've read I was a snap and I was picking up garbage. I was a security policeman when I left the Air Force, honorably discharged. I worked change of command ceremonies. I did honor guards. I went TDYs. So there's a lot of BS out there. It really gets me to pick on veterans like that too, man. I served. I didn't have to. I chose to. Not to go through this. And that's true for anyone. Man, I'm all for veterans. And a lot of people would say, well, you know, after how you were treated by, I love my country. And if I wasn't an old bastard, I'd fight and die for it still. Maybe not the president we got, but I love my country. And I love the armed forces and anyone that served. And that has nothing to do. It's never changed. I think that disturbs some of the radicals in the subject too, because they don't understand what service is. Bonnie, I was in, we had a Carl Drury. He was the deputy, how'd you call him? He was the number two in our squadron, major. And I was in there and I had to do some file cabinet thing. I don't remember, it bored me to death. But they were keeping an eye on me because I had identified myself as a leak, totally. We went through all kinds of wacky, but anyway, they had me under watch, clear. I didn't understand that now, but it beat standing out in the flight line and being cold. It was the coldest damn thing I've ever stood in over here, the dampness, man. And so I didn't mind it, but now I understand it was, you know, eyeballs on me. And maybe other people too, but it was definitely on me. And Lieutenant Tamplin came in and she was arguing. I happened to be in the office. And she argued with Carl Drury, who was a bit of a hard knock, you know. And she some expletives were used, and she goes, "I am not going out there again." Now, I didn't know something had happened to her. And I wasn't around, running around telling anyone. I got in trouble with calling my mom, which is all verified, documented. She's in heaven. Her best friend was right there, and she's in the movie too. And yeah, man, I was. The problem is, I was so naive, and getting more mad every day how certain people were being treated that it just that gene in me, you know, whatever makes a real whistleblower. They kicked it off. It wasn't my planning. Like, ooh, that's, you're kidding me. No.
Well, that's one of the things we have in common is I have a righteous streak of indignation down my back a mile wide, because when good people are just doing what they're supposed to do, or and through no fault of their own, they become victims of circumstances and then become persecuted as a result. Oh, that gets my goat.
Yeah, I'm not alone. I know that. And with this internet age, my God, I feel bad really for kids that go through these things and, you know, commit suicide. You can get me. Come see me in real life, you know, really. And no one ever does that. They claim they do. They never have, believe me. And I hear all this. I can't, you know, they're old fashioned now. I can't listen to all this. The subject is its own enemy. The government don't need this support. Press anything, the subject will do it. They'll contain, it's entertainment.
Unless well, yes, well, we saw that with the limited hangout clown show today. Now, what people have to understand, again, in historical context, Larry was one of the individuals who was part of the National Press Club gathering set up, and I give credit where credit's due. Stephen Greer set the whole thing up. Right. But Larry, along with a number of other military veterans, one of them was a personal friend of mine who was warned off the day before. He was a Air Force Reserve F-86 pilot in the Korean War era. And he, along with three or four other pilots, flew back and forth between Mountain Home Air Force Base and Salt Lake City Airport. And their job was to intercept UFOs and film it with the gun cameras, which they did four times over a four-month span. Right. And so Guy Kirkwood is his name. He's well known in the field. A lot of slander and abuse hurled at him also. And the day before, he was going to fly out to from San Diego. He was one of my old homies. He was going to fly out to D.C. to take part in the National Press Club thing. He got an anonymous phone call, said they were going to burn his house down if he left. He wouldn't have a home to come back to. Right. So people need to understand the historical context. We have this clown show today where they act all ignorant and they're making up new terms like UAPs, right? Unidentified. Now, in truth, there have been different terms for them. Fast walkers in SAC and in NORAD, they refer to them as fast walkers. And there's other terms for them. But generally, the term UFO was created by an Air Force intelligence guy. Okay, so they want to like leave everything in the past behind and make it as if everything started in 2014. And before we go any further, I want you to go back to your story, Larry, but give me your thoughts, because it seems to me, and I've been saying this for years, they're going to create this new priesthood of these so-called experts, military types, ex-military types, who are going to be a limited hangout and keep everything at an arm's length, lights in the sky level still. And as compelling as the video from the Nimitz battle group, et cetera, has been over the last several years, what you're describing is an actual face-to-face encounter with ETs at a nuclear armed base. Say that's like the minor leagues, and then there's the big leagues, right? What are your thoughts, just to digress for a moment, about this limited hangout they're rolling out, where they're trying to, like, once again, minimalize, because I want people to understand the relevance this has to their life, how relevant this is. So your thoughts on that, Larry?
Yeah, happy to do so. Some won't like it. I just like in the so-called UFO community, James, I see the convenience of rewriting history to suit, to serve agendas, egos, a lot of egos, and all the time, and more now with this internet age. It's not my world, man. The thing yesterday, I did watch it instead of just criticizing it. It was a clown show. Just, you know, if they pulled up in a clown car, You know, Bob Salas, they couldn't. Bob was on the National Press Club with me back in 2001. It was an honor in my life to do that. Had nothing to do with Greer. Respect to Greer. He kept his word. I was not part of his other agenda with his crew, nor were any of the military people. And I will tell you, that event at MPC was the largest press attendance in the MPC's history to that time. And the whole thing got jammed from within the beltway, meaning all the uplinks failed and they lost 5 million people going to watch. True story. And then we spent a week lobbying. So it wasn't just that little hang at the National Press Club. The thing yesterday, where was Bob Robert Salas? These guys don't know about, you know, he was, you know, I've had some issues with Bob, but I respect his service and this and that. Where was he sitting there and saying, you know, Bob, you were a captain in this silo. You know, you had your finger on the button and you were there. But these guys are like, don't know, never heard about it. Don't know, we've read something maybe. We don't have the money for that kind of thing. It's expected. I saw this brewing. There'll be some new angle next week. I don't know what they're going to do with Capel Green. There'll be a lot of efforts to, well, I've heard it's been, you know, I see it all in play. But I have to say, we can't be blaming the feds. You got the Louis Elizondo guy. I don't know him. He seems like I'd have a beer with him if I still drank. I would hang out with him. I don't know what to, you know, I know he's already been tarred and feathered by the community, right? You'll find I'm more critical about ufology or whatever than I am the federal government. The think tanks do this. It's slant operations. It's not even the government. It's private industry that runs all this stuff. I'm sure of it. I was told it by someone that would be in the know once. Oh,
Ben Rich himself said that the secret special access programs where all this technology is locked up, it'll never see the light of day.
Of course not. And with the reality, and I my focus really, because I went through a part of the Rendlesham thing, and it's affected everyone involved in I'd have to say negatively, or people have just blanked it, moved on. I can't say it's been good for anybody that went through it. So when I say entertainment, it's entertainment for a lot of people in the sub that look at the subject. The average person on the street still laugh at you if you say, if you know, I'm on TV here a lot on old shows on this show channel called Blaze in England. I don't know if it's worldwide. And you know, that's so where I live, but I mean the general public still are clueless, and they're gonna retitle this stuff UAP. Well, no one knows what that is, and that's part of a plan. It's just And that, you know, we have this soccer girl over here, Colleen, and her friend, and they've been bitching at each other on Facebook or whatever kids use. And they're multimillionaires. Their husbands kick a little white ball, fall down, catch hair loose. Not my game. I'm a hockey guy. But at the end of the day, that's been the news. Nothing in the news here on that event in D.C. yesterday. Nothing in England. Zero. Maybe in the tabloids. You know, but nothing on real news, nothing. But England has always been, it's still 1982, UFO spotters, UFO enthusiasts. I've never been enthusiastic about it. They have a set way here, and it's something where, because the state controls, they got a whole angry population here, and they can't let them come off the chain. They can't do it. They have 1,000 years of repression.
The trolls in the UK are particularly vicious. They're particularly venomous. Yeah,
they're the worst. I know them. I know a couple of them. And but they are. It's all England is all. Even the researchers here, not all of them, but tends to be from Yorkshire. A lot of them. No offense, Yorkshire, but boy, they all tend to come from that area. I don't know what is the water. They that will piss off some. They know who they are. Vicious, yeah, nasty, slanderous, defamatory. It means nothing to them. Oh, that one, yeah. That's a guy named with the little fella. What's his name? Young. He came on the scene from nowhere, ingratiates himself, did it with me even. I didn't vibe either way on him. And then he made up this thing that I made fun of some guy that was a drunk driver and killed himself, thank God, and not innocent people. And it pissed me off, frankly, you know, sad that anyone dies. And he went on a tirade, man. He is put out. I had to send legal letters to him. I had to send legal letters to the woman, you know, who, well, SC, she's known as, made a great, you know, these are people that are nobodies. They're literally no one, but very clever in what they do. And they repeat lies and lies and lies and lies. And I've never seen tactics like it.
Well, they fit a psych profile, Larry. They fit a psych profile. They're looking for these narcissistic whack jobs who have nothing better to do but to vent on others, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's no shortage of them, right?
Yeah. Well, look, I'm no saint, but I'll tell you, put it this way, I had friends in New York that wanted to pay visits to this country on their own dime. And I'll leave it at that, when they were seeing this stuff and, you know, unrelated to ufology, literally wanted, they said, well, I have to take care of this thing. And I'm like, God, no, because I'll leave it at that. They would.
Please continue.
But these are the type of people that are very mentally unhinged. The evidence stands for itself on that. Very nefarious. I see my co-author is ingratiating himself within that circle. Now, well, my ex-co-author, you know, that guy. And what he did is he did a naughty. I found out about it because I wanted an audit with the publisher on the second edition of her book. And what he did is pull the wagons in. He knew what was, because we got ripped off on the first edition, right? Over probably $1 million. I spent $100,000. I was the bank on my book, because I had to come out. Very lucky it got published. I didn't need the other guy, but in some ways I did, you know. You know, he did bring good things to it. He denies he ever met me now or something. He denies, I don't want to get tangled on this because it's been 5 years. It was about 3 years of solid. It affected my family. They infiltrated organizations that I was part of, though having other issues with, and they were useful to them too. You know, useful idiots. You know what I mean?
That's how they do it. It's all about disruption in one's private life, how their finances are attacked, their interpersonal relationships are disrupted. People don't realize that we hear terms all the time nowadays of, fake news. Well, in the old days, they called it black propaganda. And that's what happened to you with all these slanders, these fake news stories, literal. This is pre-internet news stories in newsprint, basically claiming that you were a liar. They went to that extent. And then.
They said my book was pulled because I lied by the co-author. And in reality, I'm the principal. I'm in the Library of Congress, British Library still. And I pulled the book because, yes, he put in the request first because he was guarding his wagons. In collusion with the publisher, I just want to say my royalty is supposed to go to my mother. She had dementia. She didn't understand that. I didn't know she had it yet. So the other person heard this and then took advantage because I live in England, they're in New York and whatever. So he's not the nicest guy you ever think of. This is what they call in the West is pulling your wagons in, circling your wagons, and then jumps in bed with Nick Pope. He wrote a goddamn book called Halt and Woodbridge. And if you look at that came out 5 months before he stabbed me in the face, this guy Robbins. And Richard Dolan published it. And it disintegrates him. Now he pretends he didn't write it and we Photoshop the cover. Now people own that book. The problem is the subject's full of very weak people that won't raise hell and say, listen, that's it. And I didn't write it. I didn't make up the cover. I didn't write the subtitle. What is that? I can't even read it because it's fly, but, an authentic whatever it says, look at it, folks. And that never happened now. He never met me. I sent my book to him, handwritten, sent it to him, and he typed it up. We never met. It's the bizarrest crap I've ever seen.
That's the irony, because he's rightly at the time exposing, and we'll get into this, what he became later a colonel, Charles Halt, the famous Halt tape, right? And the Halt memorandum, which you were the judge.
I got the, I got the tape out. I brought it back from Japan, gave it to CNN. And so in 85, it premiered in America as the full audio, you know, portions of there. I'm the guy who got that out. I got the Holt memo out. You know,
yeah, the CNN guy that put that out, I forget his name now, but he didn't even mention you as being the source of all that. I went to a lecture of his, and he acted like he was the one that came up with the Holt the Holt tape.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, Chuck, yeah, Chuck DeCaro.
That's him.
Everyone rides the wave, you know, and that's everyone wants a taste of the gate. But I really am hard pressed to say how many of them could. I have to sit on the floor now. This couch is terrible. Weak and how attention starved. So many people are. I mean, to just attach themselves to something bigger. When unfortunately, most I've met could not have handled 3.5 hot seconds of it and what came with it. You know, it's never ended. It doesn't end for anything.
Yes, and it should be looked at from the historical perspective that what happened in Rendlesham with you and your colleagues there, it had happened in September 77 at Fort Benning, Georgia. I spoke to the one guy who put the book out. He lived in San Diego. He was a good friend of mine. So I know his story.
Didn't I meet him? I think
I think he did. And also, I forget his name now, his full name now. Yeah. The memory serves, his name is Griffin. He was an ex-Army Special Forces guy at Fort Hood, incidentally, another place where for many years nuclear ordnance was stored, right? Hood, and there was another similar event. UFOs came, lots of people, and then similar to Bentwaters before the dust settled, it's like you guys were like, well, not you, but a number of people on the base were sent out far and wide, right, to different duty stations so they couldn't collude and share stories. And another friend of mine, Evie Lorgan and I, a colleague of mine, she introduced me to a guy who was in West Germany with the Army when a big triangular-shaped craft came over from the Soviet side, the Warsaw Pact side, flew around the NATO side. Alerts went on both ends, right? Everyone's going crazy. And this in broad daylight, this craft is flying around and people are freaking out. So what happened, it needs to be, again, looked at in its proper historical perspective. What happened at Bentwaters, it happened at other places prior to and afterwards too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you remember at that era when I fell in, you know, the Betty Andreas, and you mentioned I met her. And then it led to the Holt thing. I wasn't looking to be a public figure in this crap at all. I was interested in the music business and things like that, different, very different things. But it just never stopped. It just grew and grew and grew. Just for your listeners, it's not unique. I've met many guys, but at that era, say even 82, to talk about even seeing a UFO, and I'm talking about the States, England, forget it. I don't know that. Get out the pitchforks and torches on you. They still are like that here. Not in Liverpool, though. They're pretty hip here. You couldn't really in your peer group or at work or anything. I lost a job when CNN did its special assignment in 85 when it aired. It ran for 3 nights. It's on YouTube, folks. You can check it out. Bad courtroom artist. Literally, I was called in. They said, "Well, we can't." And it was a public kind of position I was in anyway. And the mindset was there. Well, you know, we really can't have. We didn't know about this. That you didn't disclose in the contract, and this we can't really have that controversy with us. I've seen it with another organization I was involved with for many years, which they used the trolls as useful idiots in one local. How do you put it? An outlet. So I see how it works. You know, call me naive sometimes, but because when you're in the middle of it, you don't often see outside of it. For your listeners, what happened to me on that night? Should I say what happened to me that night?
Yes, please. Like the clearing, the whole nine yards.
It's like doing the Mickey Dolenz tour. He's the only monkey left, and he has to go back. The last train to Clarksville. I mean, how many times? So I always, but you're always getting stuck in it. I was on duty. I was on a remote post called P-18. It's at the end of the Bentwaters runway flight line, the landing strip part, near range lights. And there's an old church out that way. And you go through guard mount. First of all, they see if you're on drugs, your head clear. You clear your weapon. You get your weapons assigned. You always got. I had an M16. I had my Motorola four-channel radio. It wasn't that cold out that particular night. I had the winter gear, the green gear on, and alert bags because we're an alert. Now Burris gets so mad. But I had a new little 110 camera. In fact, I took a picture of John Lennon a week before in New York with that 110 camera. Three or 4 weeks before. And it was my new little camera. And we didn't know if we had these modern things, God knows what the hell would be out there. I bet they don't let them carry on duty. But we weren't allowed cameras on duty, even though some guys had them. And I took pictures of the main gate that day, and it said alert condition. And then it showed, I have pictures of the normal condition. And long story short, so we're an alert, but it was going hot with Russia at that time, even closer than it is now. It was Poland. They were going to put armored units over the border. It was Poland was part of the Soviet Union then. This Cold War, the Iron Curtain was all up and running. And so it was a hot time, even though you're in the middle of it. Again, you don't realize, but we're a first strike base. They would have hit us in 10 minutes with nukes. We're gone. And equally on their part, mutually assured destruction, all that. People don't realize how real the aspect is. Even when I saw attack bombs come in. They locked the base down, the whole thing. It was a storage. I have people say, well, A-10, we had the tank killers then. They weren't that old. Fairchild A-10 Warthogs. And they're not nuclear. And of course they're not, but F-111s are, and they were just north of us. So the asset was stored separate from the delivery system. That's all it is. And off to Germany, and that's the end of all of us. If they even got off the ground, it probably wouldn't. If it was a conventional thing, like you mentioned, Spitznaz would come in, airborne, halo jumps, 30,000 feet come in, probably try to kill all of us as they could. But that's what we would observe, high, low, and in front. So I have a problem with Jim Peniston. The only thing I had, because he was in the service many years before this happened, 7 years. But to come up to a thing sitting in the woods, take out a notepad, touch it. I mean, it could have been a billion degrees, you know, centigrade. And take notes like you're writing a parking ticket, right? Now, I'm not saying it didn't. And all these zeros and whatever the hell. And they're for us in the future. What I saw was nothing to do with a human being. Now, is it an alien from another planet? I don't know. Is it from another dimension? I don't know. I know what it wasn't. It wasn't a lighthouse. It wasn't a drug experiment. It wasn't a psyop at all, though there were other 8 people involved in this thing, now it turns out, because it's been going on for days. They're trying to contain this thing. I have some my own views, and that's all they are. They're not important here. What I saw is they started saying those lights are back. We have this tower 80 feet in the WSA, weapons storage area, on Bentwaters. I was far from that. We got through the guard mount. They checked you, man. You know, there's such a high criteria. And, you know, you have access badges, lethal force authorized. And you check in every 10, 15 minutes, the CSC. I shouldn't even remember this stuff now. I should have long forgot my Air Force time. Proud of it, but didn't work out that way. And I see these deer, and that's always, I never mentioned I should get, we had low fences then, not like the pictures I posted, but when the base closed, they had the high concertina wire, big giant. We had very low fences. I think it was to be neighborly friendly. There's a lot of farm country. There was nothing going on around Ipswich or East Anglia at all. It was the most boring place I've ever been. And still go sometimes, not often though. Lovely, beautiful, but it's party like it's 1899. How's that? And that's how they like it. So that's fine. So I see this jack deer come running up to the fence and they all spooked and I'm far away from where the incidents happened. And then they backed up and ran and leaped over the 6 5 or 5 foot, 6 foot fence we had there with no razor wire and ran across the runway. I called in. I said, there's deer running. There was no aircraft up at all. I said, there's deer running around out here, you know, and they go, oh, we have airfield management. We'll come and get them or something. And they had rabbit problems. But I thought these deer were really spooked and it freaked me out a little bit. They were running from something. I don't know what it was. I don't know now. So they said, those lights are bad. Our speak ads bad. And then there was some comments. I'm looking around. What are they talking? I had no idea. So all the stuff about rumors on the base is complete bullshit. It's been, I don't know if I can say that. It's been for another lie that's often used, you know, going around the pubs and all. It's a nonsense. I served with guys there that many years later told me, I never knew a thing about this happening. Isn't that something? From different jobs. A guy I went to high school with was air rescue recovery. And Larry, he's boxing champ on the base. I went to high school with him. He was a couple years older than me, Larry Walls. And I see him in a bar. And I haven't seen him in, I don't know how long now. But he said, you know, I said, do you remember all that going on? He goes, no, nothing. So that's all nonsense and myth. There's so many myths. Here's the facts, as far as I'm concerned. I got a call, Airman Warren, deactivate your post, deactivate it. You're going to get picked up by Lieutenant England in a GOV, which is a government-owned vehicle. They could say pickup truck. They don't, right? There's all words for everything. You seem to be nodding and knowing what I mean. So the pickup truck, we used these security police pickup trucks that were open on the back, blue, and pulled up. A couple guys in the back. Mark Thompson was one of them. No one could find him. We all knew him. Just a bunch of three guys in the back. Adrian Bastenza in the front, driving Lieutenant England. And you hear on the audio tape, Lieutenant England with Halt. Well, but it turned out we brought England out to Halt. That's what happened, as far as I can see it. I'm still putting it together, you know, some of it. We got to the motor pool. We hooked up light alls, gas generated things I didn't know what they were, but they lit up when you refuel aircraft at night on the tarmac. These are like Hollywood lights attached to a generator. Not giant, but big enough. Hooked them to a few pickups, a few trucks. They were having trouble with the fuel gauges. There was all this tension. Everyone's looking for the number one, which would be Gordon Williams, the wing commander. Not the base commander, Ted Conrad. They're looking for Gordon Williams. Colonel Williams at that time, soon to be General Williams, because I worked security for his change of command in March, I think, of 81. So I wasn't no schlep, like they like to put out. So anyway, I had no idea what we're doing. I'm kind of new in the role. We get to the main gate, picked up two law enforcement cars. I think John Burris might have, because he'd been involved. He was involved this night also. But I saw John out there near a law enforcement car. We get drive all the way. You'd have to know the lay of the land. It's a long distance. There's twin bases. The forest, I didn't even know the name of those woods. And I would bet most of us in Rendlesham had no idea. We would go past the main gate. They had roadblocks up. There was a car, Ford Cortina, a woman with a daughter asleep on the seat, trying to get in the back gate. They said it's locked. They had UXB, unexploded ordnance or something. I'm thinking maybe a bomb fell off one of the planes coming in the area. I'm like, whoa. That's how they were painting to this lake. Now, again, it's the Christmas season between New Year's, between Christmas and New Year's Eve. So there were a lot of, they would use the back gate, but it would be shut at a certain point on Woodbridge. I never worked Woodbridge, went to school there for 2 weeks. That was it. We go past, they said, where are we going? England asked, and they said, turn left after we escape. And you hear all these trails now and the tourist stuff and the Jim Peniston spaceship they got in the woods, which has nothing to do with where anything happened at all, because the forest isn't even the same. It was wiped out in 87. That's another myth. They pretend it all is. It's not. It's not at all. It's gone, and it's all new. So there's another myth being sold to people, you know, just because it serves agendas, egos, and probably a few pennies. So we turned down this one trail, and that's all there was. And then there were vertical trails. I didn't know that. And the trees were like a canopy back then. Corsican pines drove all the way up, got to an area. It was a circular kind of parking area, wider part of the road. And there's a little dip. It's still there. We pulled up, got out of our pickup truck. There were red hats from the base, turned in our weapons. We had weapons, but we'd have them with us even going, working both bases. You just didn't have your ammo clip. Turn them in. On the rack, each weapon is assigned a number to you, so that's all tracked, and then moved out into the woods. Guy came up wearing aviator glasses with someone else, and that would have been Charles Holm. I asked him personally, I said, do you wear glasses at night? Because I could tell he wears contact, and he would not answer me, because he walked right up near and got England. They went that way. There were a lot of people. John Burroughs near a law enforcement car. He tried to trick me with something. Didn't we go back to the base camp and all? I'm like,
hold that thought, because that's key. Because the way I was misled into believing, Holt was strictly involved in one or the other nights, that he was not there on the third night. So what you're saying here is that could have been him with the eyeglasses.
No, that was Holt, and that was the third night. The audio tape is the third night.
Okay, see, that was part of the spin, because some of the spin that went out, Larry, was that that the Holt Forest Frawleys was a previous night. And then they went to the trouble of getting him and Jim Peniston in this segment, which they filmed for some special, to trap around in the woods, lost, and then they come to the conclusion, oh, you know, you and I were at different parts of the forest. Well, you don't need to be a genius to figure something like that out. But that was itself part of a diversion to detract from the main event which happened. And I'm not, I don't mean to minimalize or marginalize what your colleagues, your brethren, went through the previous nights. I'm just saying, it seems to me, what little we know about all of it, that yours, based on what you've and others have shared, was the main event. Yeah. So it's news to me now that Holt was there in the third night.
Well, the audio tape, I'm glad you bring this up, because there's so much smoke and mirrors. I don't know who it serves. It's sure not me, but that audio tape, Holt had a small, I was not with Holt's party, okay? So when he says I wasn't there, I was not with him, but I saw him going back. Listen, he said he went out there to investigate a landing. You don't investigate a landing that allegedly happened two nights before. There were things happening now. And they went off. They were in the far end of Capel Green Field. It's a massive agricultural field. The farmhouse is far out. A crux of his events, which you will see very clear by the end of this year, happened in I don't know if I can say, it did not happen in Capel Green with beams coming down. It happened beyond that. He would have come right back in through where the main thing at Capel Green happened. And he says he doesn't remember that. And John Burroughs and I, John thinks, I don't remember going back to the base at all. I have no memory of it. And even in the book, I kind of flashed over that. I don't remember. I remember leaving the field, walking back, and I just remember being back on the base and the sun up. That's impossible. But John Burroughs went to see, they don't want us ever together, us people, because then you start putting weirdness together and you don't want it, but it's there. The UFO community does the disservice, not the government. They just sit back and let these shills take care of business. Yeah, Holt did that, and he was in another field, and he was at the far end of Capel Green, a small party. Then there was no way he was not near proximity of what I saw eventually at some point. That's why the audio tape is 4 hours, and you only hear 20 minutes, 18 minutes. I know I was one of the first people to hear it, and I heard it in Japan in 84. Actually, in my dad's house in Connecticut in 80, early, is autumn of 84. That sure blew the family away. He said, "Holy shit!" So,
you met Halt, and then he went his way. What happened after that?
Yeah. So we split. They went diagonal down this track, a trail. They call them tracks. And that's where you're seeing him on the tape doing all his little parts of it. And then out in the field, that's a whole separate and hundreds of yards from where we were. We went straight ahead at an angle, well, a little to the left through the tree. You could walk between these trees back then. There were dead ferns on the ground very easily. It wasn't dense. It was December time. And we get to the lip of a field. I didn't know what the field was, capable green, or it was a field. It was a big oak tree with a branch. And I think I sent you a picture from, and that's my marker. It's how I always knew where to come back to if I ever did. And that branch was lit up. It was a silverish yellow light on everything. But yet there wasn't. So hard to describe this. Movement seemed at half speed. And believe me, I'm not alone. I'm in the majority here. This is just standalone account from me. That's what you've been sold, folks. I'm in the majority, as you will soon see. The standalone account is the time traveling guy, Jim Peniston. Something clearly happened to him. But it's a standalone account. John was didn't see any of that. So
and just to digress for a second, John Burroughs was already having a deal with the emotional trauma of the previous nights when you passed by him in the woods. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was off duty. You couldn't miss John. He's about 6'7" or so, 6'6", real tall guy. He was in civilian clothes. I remember he asked me, what was I wearing? I said, you were a hall desk. I said, it was in civilians. And silence. You know, when people are silent, they don't go, yeah, you're wrong. Silence, it tells you everything, doesn't it? You know, I'm not out to be right. I just know what I went through. I don't know what I went through. I don't probably ever will, but I know I went through it. What I seen, saw in this field was a glowing. I hate this thing because you can't describe it and it always comes off like a bad. I can say Capel Green, oh man, all FX on site in setting real time. There's nothing like it ever been done. People are really gonna be mad. And then a lot of other people who witnesses real people in real life and decent people are gonna go bout effing time. And I look forward to it. I've been waiting 5 years for this bitch slap. I'm telling you. Anyway, stay young, folks. Well, I get to the edge of the, people, I hear people, oh, he uses making jokes all the time. That's how I deal with things. It used to be that alcohol and cocaine, how I dealt with things. Now I try to be humor. It keeps you long, live longer, maybe a little bit. Never know these days. And then this field, you know, it's not easy to do this stuff. It's always there, always. Was this mist, it's about a foot in height. It was like a fog, man. It wasn't like this aspirin dropped. It was a foggy thing in a defined shape. There's a finger of trees. In fact, John and Jim's encounter up close with this phenomena didn't take place in Rendlesham Forest. Let me lay this on. It took place across the field of Capel Green in a stand of trees near a stream of water. That's another myth. And yet they all sell it like it all happened in the forest part. It didn't. And I knew that when I was with John. He said, no, it happened over here. I was with John and Jim. They showed me exactly where it happened.
And that needs to be emphasized. So the segment in Unsolved Mysteries, when they did the reenactment, John Burroughs doing the voiceover, they went out to investigate what they thought was a plane crash. That was a different part of the forest.
Yeah, John and Jim's thing, and I from them they took me to it, and John did again, and some years after 2010, I forget the year. And see, people don't realize we have met and all this stuff. I've known John since the 80s as a civilian in person. You'd have to see when you see the movie. Encounter, whatever, whether Jim did have a down, I don't know. I'm not going to attack him, but it is a standalone account. You know, I've been called standalone, and actually, I'm in the majority. Halt is kind of a standalone account also now, but that's their problems. They'll have to they do what they do. I don't try to attack anyone. I meet that to some of them. That didn't happen in Revolution Forest. It happened on the field of Capel Green on the first night. On the far side where there's trees and things, and there's a finger of trees that comes into the field, and there's a stream that surfaces within it. I didn't win, it was too dense. Near water, which is interesting. And that is where they encountered the thing in front of them, not in the damn forest. And yet they have monuments. It's tourist thing. There's so many myths, and I hope I didn't leak something there, but they showed that themselves. They showed a lot of people, and yet the myth keeps being perpetuated by people in ufology with agendas, ego problems, and
so the indentations of the ground, the landing site of that place, that Penistone, Burroughs, and Cabanzag was near that area too. Clearly, that was a different part of the field. And
that's accurate too. The object was in the Rendlesham Forest. John showed me right where he first saw it, and Bud Steffens came up. I'm speaking secondhand, right from John to me, not reading it. And there was this manhole kind of cover there, and that's where your marker is. Jim even verified that. And they followed the object through the forest. It set down a few times, so there was ground traces. Where they had that bang in your face thing happen, did happen across Capel Green in a finger of trees. It did not happen in the forest. It's complex. The movie will explain all that. I'm certain of that. And I'll probably be in trouble for saying all that. But they told a bunch of people down there, and yet it's never never amplified, or like, look, you guys have it wrong. They never correct the record. And this is from their mouths to my ears. What can I say?
Trying to do is get clarity for the viewers that may not be familiar with the story, or some may be familiar and have read various accounts, but because there was a number of different things going on, even on the same night. Now take us back to the point where you get to the clearing, you got the low hanging fog, and you guys are standing around, everything is kind of half motion. How many people would you say at that moment were in that clearing, and how many were hanging back like in the woods?
Okay, well, we had a base area. It wasn't called a base, staging or that was my word, right? Just where all the, it was the furthest vehicles could get. There were barbed wire fences, it was a low fence. That had been broken down. They'd put something on or cut. I don't think it was cut, but they pushed it broken. It was 2-strand barbed. Little rise, and then down in the field, it was a grass that year field. You could hear a dog barking. Off to the left was a farmer's house that was light on the second floor. And I know the exact window to this day. You could hear a dog barking. It was deadly silent. You could see flashlights way out in the distance. That would have been Holt's guys. When I look back, there would have been flashlights. Now, what they also hear, your listeners probably like, what the hell is this all about? They try to blame it on them. Even England still, even though the thing's been torn down, they still have to always bring up the Orford Lighthouse. Like, we're a bunch of amateur. It's kind of an anti-Yankee thing too, you know, a little bit. Over here for our women. Well, they got that right. There's that World War II mentality with it. And the press is rather ignorant here. You know, again, they stick with WAGs, football wives. They don't get into things with meat and real important issues. They're the mouthpiece for the federalities. That's how they run it for 1,000 years. That's how it'll probably continue to be. Until people stand up, I guess, but that's their problem. We get enough problems in my country. But I live here, that's the thing. Probably not after this week, though. In that field was, James, when I tell you about this thing being a mist, it was I think it was a part of what was to come. I think it was a device, hard to describe, translucent. You can see the ground at points. It didn't make sense, but you have to understand, this was not normal mental function. Everything seemed to be slowed down, half speed. I say half, it seemed even slower. Like you're one step out of your body, the closer you got out there, there was an effect on you. So the reality was real time. It seemed almost a delay. I don't know if that That could be shock. That could be whatever. I think it was an outside source, an external source doing some sort of defense. I don't know. The Orford Lighthouse is that way. I didn't know about it, man. You didn't see it. You can't see it from there. It wouldn't have made a mark. And we know the difference. We know how to spot every Warsaw Pact aircraft. We're trained to do that. I get mad at the insults on all of us, you know, from ignoramuses that never served a cupcake. But away from all that, in this field, out to the right of it, beyond that stand of trees that I was just talking about, not having any idea they've been through previous nights of events. I'm not thinking UFO, but I'm thinking, God, this is weird, man. It was like and I got to be careful. It was like a druggy feel, but we weren't on drugs, okay? And I was never a big drug guy, even as a kid. I wasn't a pot guy in the 70s, though I love Cheech and Chong. Friends of mine were total stoners. But to the right, the Orford Lighthouse would have been there, Farmer's House up there. Out this toward the North Sea came in an orange round ball thing, like a sphere, amber color. It was so quick, it did a low arc, came over. I mean, just every look, they had movie cameras and video filming this thing go on. Who they were, I don't know, but they've been previous nights again. So and it's not like Close Encounters. Yes, I saw that in 77. It was nothing like that. It came in, did an arc, was above this mist at 20 feet, and then big flash, man. Now, that flash, whatever it was defined in a pyramid-like shape. It wasn't like a boom, it was a pew. And anyway, I got jammed up on all this. Still, did damage to my eyes. We all have effects of exposure to a unshielded nuclear device. Medically documented, so I didn't fake that by climbing into a microwave just to, you know, make me look better. Blew my eyes out. Did all that's a whole other thing. And this there was literally a thing in front of me, about 30 feet, all being filmed here, guys. Off to my right, Sergeant was this thing that kept transmorphing. Part of the ground, or I don't know if it was on a landing thing, or the mist was gone. It was black, dark. It was a blend, a cobalt blue band at the base. There was a snowball, dirty snowball color. You hear that a lot. I like that description. A lot of raised surfaces and an amber kind of glow thing. When I say light, it wasn't. It was the weird, you know, the weirdness of the stuff. And it was gelt the things on it. It was the weirdest thing. You couldn't make it up. And you'll see pretty as close as I'll ever want to get to it again in Cape O'Grady. Thank God someone took the time, because though I'm an artist now, back then, you know, draw things like the News of the World cover, it looked like a turtle with, you know, wings. I don't know what I did. And this thing was there. And again, the movement, the reality, the reaction was not as it should be. Some people ran back and ran away. Even the sound was muffled. It was like you could hear. And Sergeant Bastinza said to me, he was my flight advisor, and he said, this is like what happened to me somewhere. I guess he's corrected that, said California, forget me. Next, our wing commander pulls up. You know, that's my language, isn't it? Slang. Because Holt said, I claim Williams drove a staff car out onto the field. Anything to make it look like a clown. He would have come up with senior officers from the base, not Holt. Came out. This is our wing commander. Now, you've seen this thing separated from the object, the right side. It came off its surface. It didn't, no doors open. There were no wind. It just kept you. It was bizarre, man. It was a thing. And what I seen was this thing rip away from it silently. It split into three things, and inside were what I perceive to be definitely not human beings.
Hold that thought, Larry, because I think there's it's a good time to take a break. You've set the stage of when the three luminescent balls or whatever coalesced and became three distinct beings, for lack of a better term. You've described Colonel Gordon Williams showing up, right? Let's take a break right here, and then we'll take it up in the second segment and go really in depth. So our dear listeners out there, you've been watching the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we do, you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.